I learned in talking with Scott about that piece that that phrase that the choir sang is called the ostinato, and it's derived from the Italian meaning stubborn. Stubborn, obstinate, of course. And in a song with a line such as this, there's a beautiful cyclical sound that we just made where we each have to know our own parts, dig in our heels, and just sing it. To make this song work and gel together, you have to know your own track, but you also have to be able to concentrate on and focus on what's going on in the other part. And then focus again to know when to move on or when to stop. And we make a gorgeous sound. Most of all, this takes practice. If we practice these songs over and over again, I bet we'd find the notes more quickly, and our rhythms would line up like that. Someone said, church is where we practice what it means to be human. The conflicts we encounter, though these are all in the scaffolding of community, a church that is courageous, a church that matters, is also wise in conflict. We could think about conflict simply as a situation in which we disagree with one another, but it is more than a misperception or misunderstanding. When we might have a conflict with someone, first, it's usually a substantive disagreement over something we want, a goal, or something that we need. Of course, our relationships as humans are multidimensional, and our emotions are always involved. Since when we disagree about something we want or need or believe, it's likely to have some degree of discomfort, stress, maybe even anger or fear. We may remember past moments of those kinds of feelings and then feel them again. On occasion, when conflicts arise, we might believe our relationships with the other party is threatened. We might feel like our own sense of self or the face we want to show the world is challenged. And of course, this can be acutely, intensely uncomfortable. A model of conflict developed by Mitchell Hammer focuses on the way our own cultures lead us into conflict when we're stressed. We rely on ingrained patterns to deal with conflict. We have a set of responses that have worked for us for a long time. As we grow up, our own cultural conditioning around conflict is often reinforced. Things like trauma or fear could lead us into patterns too. The impacts of trauma often have us feeling more protective or brittle in conflict, roll over inside of it, or try to avoid it altogether, writes trauma organizer Stacy Hines. I started personally becoming more interested in how conflict works when I served on the Unitarian Universalist Association's Commission on Appraisal, which studies issues of importance to the faith. And for much of the eight years I was on that commission, I worked on a project that looks at conflict in congregations, specifically conflicts around the role of authority, of ministers and leaders. And we wrote a book about it called Who's in Charge Here, which you can actually still get at the UUA bookstore. We were particularly interested in how power and culture impacted conflict. Like any other church project you can imagine, our work took us to look at ourselves and look inward, to become wise about our own cultural understandings of conflict. And it led us to this model that Mitchell Hammer developed. Now, you've probably all had those online quizzes or those old career exams where you fill in bubbles with a number two pencil and get some results about your personality or what career you should have. So this quiz was kind of like that. Mitchell Hammer created one. And this conflict quiz showed us our conflict styles in two key ways. One was the ways that we were either more direct or indirect in approaching conflict. And the other was in the ways that we're either more emotionally expressive or emotionally restrained in approaching conflict. And what I liked best about his ideas is that he tested them all over the world. He'd seen how different cultures had produced different dominant patterns, And he didn't lead us down a path to say one style was better than the other. Learning about my own conflict style during this project was a huge aha moment for me. I quickly realized a lot about myself and my relationship with those folks that I was working with so closely on that commission. I fit into the engagement style, which is verbally direct and emotionally expressive. And all my fellow commissioners fit into what is called the discussion style. Verbally direct, but more emotionally restrained or controlled than I am. While our cultures were similar in some ways, the culture of my own family of origin, which had operated in non-direct ways that sometimes silenced emotion or suppressed it during conflict, spurred a sort of rebellion. We all have our own story to explore that shaped how we show up for conflict. Take a moment to recall your own family or community of origin. Yes, you're allowed more than one. How did you resolve conflict as a family or in a community in which you were a part? Were things loud or soft? A discussion or a yelling match? Did you need to take space to be alone? Did you pick up a book and do some research on how to come together like our knight and dragon did? Was there a relative who always turned the attention to a proverb or story to make their point? Are there other influences in your life that have helped you to share emotions with others or deal with disagreement? Our recognition of our own styles and those of others can help us be more accurate when we're trying to size up someone else's perspective, when we're trying to resolve a disagreement. When we're learning to sing around, we're going to have to know what it's like to be in the other group, at least a little bit, in order to be able to sing together. In spiritual community of diverse belief, we need models for conflict that go beyond the status quo, beyond the notion that conflict is something that always, at all costs, need to be avoided. When I didn't get the emotional tone of someone else on that commission on appraisal, or when someone else might think I was mad when I would share my opinion with passionate intensity, I couldn't get why they seemed to be preferring to look at facts or figures or seemed to me like they were withholding something. On the commission, I had to learn to stay curious about conflict and about one another. This allowed us to work better together as a team, to take more risks with one another because we learned to remind ourselves of what other commissioners and what they were coming from. It wasn't always neutral territory, and the process of resolving conflicts took time and attention. Those Unitarian Universalist principles that we heard this morning, I believe they can help us to stay at the table in ways that allow each person to understand and identify actions as affirming one another's inherent worth and dignity. There's one also source of our faith that reminds us of the direct experience of the transcending mystery and wonder that must be affirmed in all cultures, but is not the same in all cultures and deserves our particular attention and respect. Admitting our own uncertainty, we are held closer together as we journey towards wisdom in conflict with those we love and hold dear. Based on our own religious heritage, you'd think as Unitarian Universalists, we'd be really good at conflict by now. Our own Unitarian and Universalist stories are full of conflict, full of times when religious forebears actively disagreed with doctrine or law, and even with each other. In rejecting the Trinity, early Christian Unitarian Christian churches were saying no to things a lot, and not just walking out and declining a potluck invite, but engaging in open written and verbal disagreement. Our very existence might be due to conflict. In early Unitarianism in Transylvania, leaders even died for the right to debate and speculate about religious matters. Ferenc David, also known as Francis David, worked as a court preacher. Yes, that was a real job, and was an active participant in discussions of reform on ideas like God or Jesus. And when one king didn't agree with David or this David or this pattern of open and direct, passionate debate, he forbade it to exist. David was eventually reported, convicted of the crime of innovation. That was the title of the crime of debating religion in public, and imprisoned in the city of Deva, where he eventually died. 2 summers ago, I visited and sat in prayer near the cell where he spent his final days, and I wondered, where would we be today, as you use, if David's inquisitiveness had not been shut down? Did we lose our love of conflict as Unitarians and as Universalists after that brief heyday? Our covenants, our promises of how we want to be together are all about our culture, the ones we're creating today, and the melding and clashing of the cultures in which we hailed. Yes, they're about our principles and shared values, but in practice, we shouldn't kid ourselves that we agree with everything everyone says or don't have conflict. Even as we love each other and even as we share the goal of world community, as our principles say, we experience divisions and clashes and even sometimes hurt or clamoring. When we come to church or the dinner table, we may be tempted to mirror how we fought with the kid across the street growing up, or the ways in which we were drawn into political debate at the holiday family dinner table, or even the determination with which we have fought for our kin and our own lives. Becoming wise in conflict doesn't mean jumping right to concession or forgiveness. It doesn't mean giving up what we care about. Stacey Hines writes that, "I think of the many relationship rifts that can be prevented and the many movement splits or polarization that could be shifted to more connection and more collective power. There's a great amount of learning we can garner. It looks worth it to me," she writes, "to get good at generative conflict." I don't want to say it's as easy as reading a cookbook. There isn't exactly a manual of how to build or face our own cultural patterns, even those that we believe we are like. In engaging models of conflict, cultural conflict styles on that commission on appraisal, I had to actively try on the idea that other people were not unfeeling or unkind when they sought to maintain a calm atmosphere. I had to release my feelings of shame that I sometimes appeared rude or dictatorial when I thought I was just expressing my opinion. Becoming wise requires humility and sharing the opportunities to adapt. Today, it's also important to remember that the triggers to despair are so plentiful and the stakes on the national stage so high. It is a systemic strategy of oppression to fragment those who are marginalized and those who are poised to be allies or accomplices from one another. Our social conditions as a community are always with us. Even here, in generative conflict, we might be able to find respect, albeit differences among us. The stories of our ancestors, recent and different, those who were courageous again and again to name realities as they see them and fight not only for the rights of others, but for the very right to offer dissent or hold transparent, accountable disagreement in the first place. This is one of the Unitarian historic values we take into election season. One of the reasons our faith community at large and has often been concerned about voter registration and participation in the democratic process. Yet the realm of political participation has also been a terrain of conflict for many of us, within our communities of faith, but also within our families and neighborhoods. Being in conflict can sometimes feel too big to bear, or like things might fall apart. We may need more tools at our disposal than simply intelligence. We might need the wisdom of our bodies and even of our songs to help us navigate conflict too. Rabbi Yosef Goldman writes that as we do our best to hold it together, we can hold it together. When things feel too big to bear, when it feels like they are falling apart, prayer and singing in community is a way we can hold it together. When we learn our own part and listen to the rhythm of our counterparts, he writes that communal singing has the power to transform us, to bring us back to the breath, the exhale, and the inspiration upon which our spirit can ride.